The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
It's time for the American people to declare independence from every last COVID mandate. We have to tell this band of hypocrites, tyrants, and racists that we're done with having them control our lives, mess with our children, and close our businesses. We're moving on from COVID. Whether they like it or not, we're moving on. Canadian truckers, you've been reading about it, who are resisting bravely these lawless mandates, are doing more to defend American freedom than our own leaders by far. And we want those great Canadian truckers to know that we are with them all the way. They are. They've really shown something. It's time to move on. Time to move on.
Time to move on, says Donald Trump. That's Saturday night at his rally down in Texas. Showing some love there for the Canadian truckers, the Freedom Convoy that made its way to Ottawa. We'll have a lot to say about that here in just a moment, as well as a lot of other subjects that we need to squeeze into the next 55 minutes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We're kicking off another week of broadcasting here in our broadcast studio. This message goes out over the air on our radio station here locally, KPCG. That's kpcg.fm online. You can get to the stream there. Also, you get to the live video stream of this show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Oklahoma time on our website, thetrumpet.com. And thetrumpet.com/live takes you to that stream page, and also gives you the podcast that you can watch on demand. We're also thankful for our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio. Channel 3 on that platform takes the audio stream into 11 million homes around the United States. And you've got some audio stream replays on Channel 3 and Channel 6 of CRN Digital Talk Radio. So, the convoy, it made its way to Ottawa. And, of course, Justin Trudeau, it's like a third world dictator when the masses of discontent, they come in and he flees the scene, using COVID, of course, as a pretext to get out of Dodge. We just see a tweet this morning. He put himself into quarantine because he came into contact with someone that had the cold, but he didn't have the Omicron, but he's tested positive for it today. Today, he releases a statement, and the comments under it, hilarious. Here's his statement. This morning, I tested positive for COVID-19. I'm feeling fine, and I'll continue to work remotely this week, while the convoy's there in Ottawa, by the way, while following public health guidelines. Everyone, please get vaccinated and boosted, which he did. He was boosted on January 4th, just a few weeks ago. Triple jabbed. And now he gets the COVID. No wonder there's a 50-mile-long convoy of these people. And Canadians, I read a letter today to a podcaster who said that in their small town, I believe it was in Ontario, it was somewhere in Canada, just a small town of 50,000 people, he said that 7,000, it's a tiny town, 7,000 turned out to cheer on the convoy, and the temperatures outside, it was like minus 30 degrees Celsius. They were freezing and hugging one another, hugging strangers in support of this convoy. We talked all about it on Friday's program, and there they are in Ottawa. Over the weekend, just honking away. We've got plenty of footage showing this. Honking and protesting. Totally peaceful. Never mind what the mainstream media are saying. a peaceful rally of protesters protesting for freedom. They are demanding a restoration of freedom. They are asking for all of these crazy mandates to be lifted. You have to get the booster so that what? So that you can get Omicron 3 weeks later? People see what's happening here. They see how that this is just being used to oppress ordinary citizens in Canada, in Australia, in the United States, in Europe, in the UK. The tide, though, is beginning to turn, as you can see. I mean, look at those crowds. That's in Ottawa over the weekend. And then look at the crowd at Donald Trump's rally. Tells you everything that you need to know. And then you turn on Scarborough or someone like that on MSNBC or CNN. And it's as if they don't even know this is happening. Or if they do, they say it's violent. They say it's another January 6. Listen to this from Morning Joe earlier today, clip 5.
The demonstrations were initially aimed at pushback against vaccine mandates for truck drivers crossing the U.S.-Canada border. But the movement escalated into an expression of disapproval with the Canadian government's COVID-19 policies. Officials say several investigations are underway into reports of severe vandalism and criminal behavior, including the desecration of national monuments.
Oh, so the desecration of monuments is now criminal behavior. That's criminal behavior. This is some serious vandalism that's going on. This is from Emma Jo Morris, a journalist. She says a trucker convoy put a Canadian flag on the Terry Fox statue's back and put a freedom sign on his arms. They put a sign that says freedom. They hung that to his arms and they put a Canadian flag on his back. This, according to Mika, is what passes for a desecration of monuments. What happened evidently a year and a half ago, that's been erased. That's been blotted out. Pulling down, burning, smashing monuments. In some cases, right outside the White House. And now that's criminal behavior? Where was that commentary a year and a half ago? Where was that commentary in the summer of 2020? It's hard to believe these people can even give their commentary with a straight face. The Globe and Mail, Ottawa police investigate desecration of monuments by trucker convoy protesters. You see right where they're going with this. Listen again to this clip from Morning Joe, clip 6.
Meanwhile, Ottawa Mayor Jim Watson said some protesters harassed a soup kitchen, demanding free meals because their refusal to wear masks meant they were not to order in restaurants. That soup kitchen tweeted COVID protesters were given meals to defuse the conflict and that this weekend's events have caused significant strain on our operations at an already difficult time.
So these anti-vaxxers actually took food from the mouths of the homeless.
Hungry, yeah.
Yeah, the hungry. They're stealing food from the homeless, these anti-vaxxers. So evil. These people. How could they steal food from the homeless? How could they hang a flag to the Terry Fox monument? We got an email, by the way, someone that wanted us to know that not everyone in media in Canada is communist. She works at the Western Standard. That's a publication, I guess, covering the west of Canada. She says here, you nailed the Freedom Convoy issue. Fantastic. Wish all Canadians would hear this. That's from Linda Slobodian. She's a columnist at the Western Standard. She says it's definitely not a communist newsroom. So there's a few, and good for her. Evidently, she listened to the program on Friday. And says it was spot on. It's what all Canadians need to hear. But a lot of them are hearing it, or at least a message like it. A lot of them are seeing it. A lot of them are turning out this spontaneous show of patriotism in Canada. And look, I'm not a Canadian, but I think some of the Canadians that we have here on campus would tell you this is very, very unusual. our nations are so far gone. They've just spent all the generations now of modern education, this communist infiltration, the mass immigration in the United States, illegal, and multiculturalism, all of these woke policies in government, in the entertainment that our nations produce. There's a sickness, goes from head to toe. And so in a lot of ways, this show of patriotism, where you whether you go back 4 years to 2016 when Donald Trump was running for president, or you see this trucker convoy, it's surprising. It's shocking in some ways. Morning Joe, just one last clip. Listen to this. They say that Trump supporters are those that are patriotic in their display of support for their nation. They say they're the ones who are conspiracy theorists or who are out there with all kinds of hyperbole that's causing storming the Capitol or fake insurrections. This is Morning Joe again, clip 7.
Yes. They've become what they hated. They've become what they mocked. And now they're taking food from soup kitchens because they're so put upon for being asked to do what they've been asked to do, required to do their entire lives.
Coming up. It's
a cult.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. It's a cult, these truckers. All of this popular support. According to Joe Scarborough, it's a cult. It's just what did Trudeau say last week? It's just a little fringe group. Just a few people. Only a few people turn out for Trump rallies. They lie. CNN, speaking of the Trump rally, it offered this as a headline. Trump offers chilling glimpse into possible second term. I mean, this is what's dangerous. Not these heavy-handed, oppressive policies of the radical left. It's a Trump rally, or it's truckers honking their horns in downtown Ottawa. Former President Donald Trump conjured a vision of a second term that would function as a tool of personal vengeance and become even more authoritarian than his first when he vowed to pardon U.S. Capitol insurrectionists if he runs for the White House again and wins. That really set him off. The comment on Saturday night that, well, look, I'm going to be fair with those January 6th protesters. They're not just going to rot in jail. And all that just set off CNN. CNN goes bananas over that. Same with Meet the Press, the Sunday shows. Another one. Trump says he wanted Pence to overturn the 2020 election and falsely claims it was the vice president's right. The New York Times is also reporting that Sean Hannity, in those texts between him and Kayleigh McEnany, was saying, hey, we need to stop with all this stolen election talk. I mean, when you go through 2 Kings 14 and you see where it says he has no help, no helper, Jeroboam, God has to do it by the hand of Jeroboam because there's no help. The affliction is so bitter. Sean Hannity was Trump's biggest supporter for 4 years. Even he was intimidated into silence over the stolen election. We'll get to that in just a moment. Listen first, though, to this CBC journalist and what she says about this movement, this protest for freedom in Canada. Clip 1.
Given Canada's support of Ukraine in this current crisis with Russia, I don't know if it's far-fetched to ask, but there is concern that Russian actors could be continuing to fuel things as this protest grows, but perhaps even instigating it from the outset.
Right. There's concern that the Russians could be behind this. Whenever they're being exposed, just trot that out. Another event instigated by the Russians, says this journalist. You notice she doesn't say anything factual. She just says there's concern that Russians might be behind it. This is what passes for news. They're all propagandists. There's a few rare exceptions, evidently the Western Journal. But look at the message they come out with. Even as the movement is spreading. You have it in Italy. You have it in the Netherlands, in Brazil, in Australia, and all of these mass protests that have been covered up because of propagandists in the media like that woman who are basically saying it's a fringe group and it's a dangerous cult and the Russians are behind it. And oh, if Donald Trump ever gets into office again, vengeance. I think these are people that are beginning to lose their grip on power. They're certainly being exposed. We'll have to see what happens here in the United States. I think the truckers here would be a little bit wiser to the fact that if they tried, although you do hear this group saying we're going to drive from California to New York or wherever, D.C., but because of January 6th, the setup, the fake insurrection, you know the FBI is already working. Ray Epps is probably taking truck driving lessons at the moment so that he can be an insurrectionist. We need to drive the rig right through the Capitol. You know the FBI is getting ready for this kind of thing to use it to try to frame more Trump supporters. Canada, some of these other nations, certainly they don't have the bureaucracy, the deep state, to the extent that the United States does. Still, though, you can go to a Trump rally safely without being framed, and tens of thousands do it. Tens of thousands, some say 50,000 turned out. Again, in frigid temperature, almost like an Arctic freeze, and they're still out in full force. As you saw with that block of footage we played for you, look at this crowd. This is in France. And you'll notice from the way that the camera pans around that they're outside Pfizer's offices in France, in Paris, protesting. Clip two.
Véran, Macron, Castex, assassin! Véran, Macron, Castex, assassin! Véran, Macron!
That's in Paris, right outside the Pfizer regional office there. They've had enough. Look, Omicron, I mean, the hilarity of a Canadian prime minister fleeing because he might get the cold, and then he does get the cold 3 weeks, as it turns out, 3 weeks after the booster. Omicron has revealed this hoax, this fraud. It's exposed. Here are protesters all over the world saying, you told us to lock down and we did it. You told us to wear the mask and we did it. The vaccines come along. You said, get the jab. We got one. We got two. Then we got the booster. And now we're still getting COVID. It's not worked what you've set up, what you've put in place. All of your solutions, it's just made the problem worse. And who knows what variant is spreading across China right now, even as they gear up for the Winter Olympics. China's got sections of its country in lockdown at the moment. Hopefully it's Omicron, the mild, mild strain. What if it's not? What if it's something worse? 2 years, 15 days to stop the spread. And here we are, and people, as you can see, they've had enough. They're fed up. They're fighting for freedom. They're drawing a line in the sand. And for the most part, it's peaceful. I saw a clip on Friday of this Canadian conservative. Well, I guess I probably played it on this show. Maybe I didn't. Can't remember. I see a lot of clips. Anyway, the pack of media types, they're surrounding him as he's going into these government offices, saying we understand there might be a violent element in this protest that's forming in Ottawa. And he turned around and said, you know, I don't recall you really being that concerned about the violent elements in these Antifa protests that swept across nations all over the world in 2020. And he says, anytime you have a gathering of 50,000 people, you're going to have a couple dozen bad elements. That's just the way it is with mass gatherings. He put it right back on him, though. But still, they get up and they say what they say. It's a cult. It's, did you know they're desecrating monuments? Now they're concerned about that? And it's not even happening, by the way. They just lie about it and then act like they're concerned about the monuments after years of monuments being trashed and destroyed. And they applauded it. They encouraged it. With respect to Donald Trump's speech on Saturday night, he talked here about a year under this fake presidency, Joe Biden and, of course, Barack Obama working behind the scenes. Listen to what he says about the attack on America, essentially. Clip 10.
With Biden and the radical left, it's always America last, and that's what they do. You look at these horrible deals they make throughout the world, it's always America last. Everyone in Washington is obsessing over how to protect Ukraine's border, but the most important border in the world right now for us is not Ukraine's border, it's America's border, and we do nothing about it but let people come in, and we have no idea who they are. The first duty of the American president is to defend the American border. Before our leaders talk about invasions of other countries, they need to stop the invasion of this country. It's being invaded.
It's an invasion, he said on Saturday night down in Texas. And, of course, they're streaming across the border of Texas. Even as we speak, 2 million over the course of last year. And here is a fake administration wanting to send some troops to Europe and will do nothing about the invasion at America's southern border. That's Donald Trump echoing some of the same sentiments that Tucker Carlson has made on his number one rated newscast at night, cable newscast on TV. Listen to what Donald Trump said about the election steal from 2020, clip 11.
But in order to truly reclaim our country, we must solve one of the most important issues of all, ensuring free, fair, and honest elections. The 2020 election was rigged, and everyone knows it. You know who knows it more than anyone else? The Democrats.
Everyone knows it, I guess, except Sean Hannity now and some of these conservative commentators that have been intimidated into silence. There's a few rare exceptions. But you think about some of the video footage that came out even over the weekend. These drop boxes, people pushing in 15 or so ballots into one box. Dinesh D'Souza, he's got a movie coming out this spring, and they don't say anything about it. It's about the election fraud of 2020. They don't even bring it up, not even conservatives. Even as it's being exposed, it's so much more obvious today than it was 12 months ago. This is from the New York Times. Maybe the New York Times knows. Maybe the New York Times knows a lot more of this is going to be exposed in the coming weeks, and it wants to get out in front of it. This is the New York Times over the weekend. Democrats decried dark money in politics, but used it to defeat Trump. The New York Times says this? Yeah, they decried it for years and years and years, but now they use this so-called dark money to defeat Donald Trump. Talks about how so many of these big donations were funneled through these foundations that then worked their way over to these super PACs that then supported, in this case, Joe Biden, the fake president. It says here, a New York Times analysis reveals how the left outdid the right at raising and spending millions from undisclosed donors to defeat Donald Trump and win power in Washington. I mean, they needed money. If you're going to pay these ballot harvesters $10 per fake ballot, and you need millions and millions of ballots to win, that's a lot of money. You're going to need tens of millions of dollars. And Zuckerberg and so many of the others were quite happy to help out. We got to take out Trump. And we got a perfect, we have a perfect excuse to do it through the ballots. By those ballot boxes, the drop boxes, and the ballots that were mailed out, some 100 million ballots just spread over the nation, out into who knows where. And the ballot harvesters, I mean, they were ready. You know, just by looking at the left's reaction to these state legislatures that are saying, you know what, we just want the rules in place that were there before 2020. The fact that they would be as hysterical as they are, saying it's racist, if it's dialed back to pre-2020 standards, you know, they know. It's like Donald Trump said there. You know who knows it was stolen above all? The Democrats, the communists. That's how they pulled it off. Says here, for much of the last decade, Democrats complained with a mix of indignation, frustration, and envy that Republicans and their allies were spending hundreds of millions of difficult-to-trace dollars to influence politics. So this is the New York Times' way of saying, yeah, the Democrats cheated, but the Republicans cheated before them. So really, it's just the Democrats catching up. Here's the New York Times wanting to get out ahead of all the evidence, even video evidence, proving the fraud. I'll show you some here in just a second. It says, spurred by opposition to then-President Trump, donors and operatives allied with the Democratic Party embraced dark money with fresh zeal. It wasn't a perfect election. It was a stolen election. But I guess Sean Hannity and Kayleigh McEnany, they can't talk about that. They can't talk about it at Fox News. Maybe Tucker can work it into a monologue just for a second or two, but he's got to, even he has to move on pretty quickly. It says here, the findings reveal the growth and ascendancy of a shadow political infrastructure that is reshaping American politics. But you see, the New York Times justifies it by saying it's you know, it's all through politics. Everybody does it. And yeah, there was a little bit of fraud here and there, but certainly not enough to overturn the results. Look at this video footage released by True the Vote over the weekend. You can just play it alongside me if you guys want. Clip 3. You see the guy approaching the ballot box. He's got what must be 10 or 15 ballots fanned out. He pulls his cell phone out. He's got to take a picture of it because you got to have proof. You got to have proof if you're going to get $10 per ballot. So there he is stuffing them in broad daylight. He's bringing 15 ballots and stuffing them into the box. Now you would think there would be some honest reporters saying, well, hang on a second. Is this America or some third world country? The cheating right out there in the open. True the Vote, as I said, released the footage. They're the same group that revealed the 242 traffickers in Georgia. This is just Georgia. They made a total of 5,662 trips to ballot drop boxes. 242 activists that went to these drop boxes 5,662 times. And no one in the major media is worried about this? No one is concerned about this? Everybody thinks all those ballots that were dropped in there were legit? You get the ballot in there, if it flows into the system, then it's going to pass through any kind of audit, because what have the audits been? Well, we're just going in to show, we're going in to make sure there's an actual ballot there. They don't examine the ballot or where the ballot came from or if it violated any chain of custody laws. All the audits to this point. Now, they got into more in the Arizona audit, but you just didn't have people that had the courage to then go after those who cheated. They won't go deep enough, so many of them, because they're like Sean Hannity. They're intimidated into silence from these thugs. As I say, they operate much like that shoplifter did that we showed footage of last week. They just waltz right in. They do it in broad daylight, and then they tell you to your face It was perfect. And if you don't shut up with this talk about the stolen election, we'll block you out. You'll be censored. Look at this this trailer. I don't know when the movie comes out. I think sometime this spring. But here's another movie production by Dinesh D'Souza. And see for yourself a little tidbit from the upcoming movie. I guess it's called The 2000 Mules, I think it is. Clip 8.
The 2020 election was the most secure in U.S. history.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
He lost a fair and secure election.
The most secure
election in American history.
Really?
All those of you who volunteered and worked the polls, you deserve a special thanks from the entire nation.
This one mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes. He's not alone. We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops. Leaving no fingerprints. Snapping photos to get paid. A coordinated ring of illegal vote harvesting in all the key states where the election was decided.
They've delivered us a clear victory.
I'll be lining up for that movie when it comes out. And you can be sure a lot of other people will as well. They won't talk about it on Fox News. But here they tracked 2,000 mules engaged in illegal ballot harvesting. One individual making 53 trips to 20 drop boxes. And then those people have the audacity to say it was perfect. A perfect election. They look you in the eye. They say it with a straight face. They lie. They lie. You know, that prophecy in, again, 2 Kings 14, we just went through it this morning in doctrines class, where, again, Jeroboam is singled out and is alone. There's no help. And when you get even people close up to Donald Trump saying, hey, just don't bring up the stolen election, because, well, after all, it motivated or caused the insurrection, and we can't have that. We can't have that. Listen to Lindsey Graham. This was on Face the Nation yesterday. He was asked about the January 6th protesters and that comment that Donald Trump made Saturday night about how that he's going to be fair with those protesters, even if it means giving them a pardon, if they're sitting in jail rotting away and they don't deserve it. And Lindsey Graham is a Republican senator. He's a Republican. Some would say a Republican in name only. Clip 12.
Senator, more than 730 people have been charged by the Justice Department for their role in the attack on the Capitol on January 6th to stop the certification of our election. Last night, President Trump at a rally said this.
If I run and if I win, we will treat those people from January 6th fairly. And if it requires pardons, we will give them pardons because they are being treated so unfairly.
Pardons? Do you agree?
Yeah. No, I don't want to send any signal that it was okay to defile our Capitol. I want to deter people who did what on January the 6th. And those who did it, I hope they go to jail and get the book thrown at them because they deserve it.
The thing of it is, that's what's happened over the past year. 700 and some odd protesters have been thrown in jail. The book has been thrown at them. And some of them for just trespassing. Forget about desecration of a monument. Now, there were those certainly engaging in vandalism, a few smashing windows and so on. And we've talked before about the infiltration about the communists that were in the midst, that were instigating it. The FBI agents that were instigating it. And there's proof of that. Quite unlike what that woman said about the Canadian truckers. She's saying there's Russian instigators. Well, where's the video proof? Where's the connections? She says that as this is happening in real time, we have, over the course of a year now, Tucker Carlson went into his three-part documentary on the subject. Darren Beatty over at Revolver News, he's exposed the feds for their involvement in Jan 6. And so many of these people rotting in jail, they're still waiting for their day in court. And Donald Trump just says, hey, if we have to give pardons just so that there's fairness and justice here, we'll do it. And that triggers the communists in the media. Oh, does it ever? And even Lindsey Graham, he can't even give a balanced statement that, look, the ones that were guilty of vandalism, they need to be penalized. But the truth here is that this is a massive abuse of power. And we've got people in jail for misdemeanors for months and months and months. And it's wrong. It's unjust. Can't bring himself to say it, though. It's like Ted Cruz, a violent terrorist attack. And you know, one thing about Ted Cruz's statement is he said, look, that's what I've been saying over the past year. And he's right. He has been calling it that from the beginning. It's just that he was called out for it by Tucker Carlson. And then Cruz started to sing a different tune. The corruption here, the lawlessness, right at the top levels of government. I mean, there really is no help. Only God can save America. No man's going to be able to do it. No political movement's going to be able to do it. No, as much as you want to cheer on the convoy is not going to be able to do it. I mean, you can look at these events and see, as I've said, that the tide is definitely turning. But God, that's where our focus ought to be. Our focus ought to be, and in addition to that, our focus ought to be on repentance toward God. Donald Trump, when he was campaigning the first time around, 2016, he oftentimes had the preachers there with him at those rallies. And they'd bring up that verse in 2 Chronicles 7, talking about the nation needing healing. But they'd leave out, they'd conveniently leave out the point about repenting so that we can then experience the healing. This is a sickness from head to toe. Isaiah 1 addresses that, as do so many other passages in the Bible. Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. We'll go through that maybe at a later time. But for now, we'll go off for a break and then come back to conclude today's show with a Bible study section. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can send comments to td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. Watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
We had a dinner here the other night with quite a few old timers. There were some students there that hosted it for us. But some of us that have been around supporting the work of the Philadelphia Church of God since the early days, back in the early 1990s, and some of the students, as young as they are, wanted to just hear us talk about some of that exciting history, those small beginnings. That's the way the Bible describes it. I mean, if you go back 30, 31, 32 years ago, God's work primarily consisted of photocopying this manuscript called Malachi's Message to God's church today, and then distributing that manuscript, which later became that blue book that you see there on the screen, to as many people as possible. A lot of the work consisted of just trying to find, you know, the correct mailing addresses of family and friends so that we could get this book into their hands. In the opening of Malachi's Message, those that were getting the book in their mailbox, if they had the courage to open it and read it, this is what it says at the outset. Then they that feared the Eternal spoke often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Eternal and that thought upon his name. That's quoting, of course, from Malachi 3 and verse 16. So you read this verse, if you started in on reading Malachi's Message, and then my father makes this comment. Why a book of remembrance? This is not a book of life. It's a special book which concerns a unique group of people who fear the Eternal and fellowship a lot. My father says, these are the Philadelphians who remembered. We are warned to remember what we were taught. And he cites Malachi 4, verses 4 through 6, the prophecy of the end time Elijah. And that's why this program often takes you back to Mr. Armstrong's work and ministry. We have the He Was Right booklet here that we often show. This is a work. I mean, we're coming up to 100 years if you put the Philadelphia Church of God together with the Worldwide Church of God under the direction of Herbert Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong converting to the truth, of course, back in 1926 and 27. But here we are, warned to remember. And you find this warning all through the Bible. My father, years ago, at a college forum, he talked about how that a good historian is not one that instructs only, but that one that helps others to remember. The Apostle Peter, in his epistles, he said, I'm not going to be negligent in bringing these things to your memory, bringing this to your remembrance. Though you know it, some of you may already know it, but I'm going to do my job and just make sure that we drill it down. Make sure that we don't forget. I mean, look at our nations. You see the parallels with the spiritual nation of Israel, what happened after Mr. Armstrong died, and then what's happening in our own nations now. Look at how forgetful we are. Look at how forgetful human nature is. You hear one thing and then we go, you know, from that to something entirely different in a matter of weeks or months. God's work is, among other things, there's certainly a lot that we're engaged in now, but one thing that we're always, always doing is reminding our college students, our members, our coworkers, our donors, we're reminding them always to remember what they were taught. It says in the Malachi's Message, it's a book of remembrance because they remembered what they were taught. The Laodiceans fail to escape because they forget and turn to a lukewarm message. It says God remembers the Philadelphian group because they remembered him. If we forget God, if we forget God's law, then God will forget about us. He'll forget our children. Read Hosea 4, verses 6 and 7. We've got to hold fast. We've got to hold on. Let's look at Zechariah 4 and verse 10 to begin with here. This is the prophecy, the inset about the Zerubbabel. That was fulfilled too in the ministry of Herbert Armstrong. Zechariah 4 and verse 10, it says, "For who has despised the day of small things?" Don't despise those days of small beginnings. There was a time when underneath this studio, it was nothing but raw land. We had 38 acres or nearly 40 acres that we purchased initially back in 2000. And then soon after that, we added another 120 acres just because the vision was there. The late Tim Thompson, he was working alongside my father and talking about building this campus and what we would like, how we'd like to have it spread out. And so even though we were right in the midst of the litigation years over Mystery of the Ages and canceling youth camps and canceling TV stations, just so we could put more of our resources and even money into fighting for Mystery of the Ages. But even as that was going on, we were also purchasing property and preparing to build for God. This is all some of that history that this work has had for 32 years now. But it did begin very, very small, as I was telling the students on Friday evening at that dinner. You go back far enough to the beginning of God's College, and there was a time when there were just two mobile home trailers on campus. One of them had four girl students. One of them had four male students. And we didn't have the field house done yet. So they had to come into the Waterwood complex down in the heart of Edmond for their classes. And then when the field house got done a few weeks into the first semester, then we had to shuttle out. Those of us instructing had to shuttle out and have all of the classes. Everything went on in the dining hall of the John Amos Field House. You talk to students today and, you know, the dining hall is just the dining hall. It's just for food. That's it. For eating. For meals. Back in 2001 and 2002, the dining hall was the college. That's where they ate. That's where you had classes. Of course, the gym adjacent to it was where we had the sports, the PE, music class, all of it. All of it. There in the John Amos Field House. You look at the campus today and see all the pieces that have been added since. It's a sprawling campus. And we don't want to forget those days of small beginnings. Look at Mr. Armstrong starting his radio ministry on a 100-watt radio station, just 15 minutes per week. 15 minutes over the airwaves. He got into that and soon realized we've got to have a magazine that can go out. And, of course, it was more like a letter, hand-mimeographed. As some of you might remember, if you watched the old Behind the Work films from years and years and years ago, started with 250 copies, those original Plain Truths. 1947, AC started with four students. We started with eight. They started with four in 1947, and the students had to live off campus because there wasn't a campus. They had to get a job off campus. And then they'd come onto the campus, which back then it was just a library building, or what was later the library. But it was at the early years, it was the entirety of the college, that one structure there in Pasadena. A very small beginning, and a lot of God's people have come to despise it. Mr. Armstrong in his autobiography explains why it had to start the way that it did. It said, had Ambassador College started big with several hundred or a few thousand students, a great campus filled with large college buildings, an administration building, classroom buildings, laboratories, music conservatory, large ornate auditorium, gymnasium, a fine quarter-mile track and football field, a large library building with 50,000 or 500,000 volumes, dormitories, dining halls, everything complete. And what he's describing there is exactly what it was in the 1980s when I went out there. We had all of those buildings. Everything was complete. But he said it didn't start that way, because if it started that big, I mean, you certainly could have no faith in accepting it as God's college. When God starts a work through men, it always starts in the smallest possible way, because he continually wants to remind us, that he's the one that does the building. He's the one that does it through us, that does it through human beings who are compliant and submissive to his will. And Mr. Armstrong certainly was. Back up to verse 6. Notice this. It says, "Then he answered and spoke to me, saying, This is the word of the Eternal unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts." It was the power of God's Spirit working through Mr. Armstrong. It was Herbert Armstrong walking by faith, the faith of Jesus Christ. It was Herbert Armstrong putting his faith in God. And you can read examples of this all through his autobiography, where he just stepped out in faith and trusted God. So many financial examples where God provided the funding after he stepped out and trusted in God. A small beginning for a work that by the end of it was generating something like $160 to $170 million of income per year. That's where it was in the mid-1980s. Verse 7, it says, "Who are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shoutings, crying, Grace, grace unto it." All of these miraculous events, God just flattening mountains, if need be, for Herbert Armstrong, and he's done it with our work as well. In the autobiography, again, it says, "When the great God, creator, ruler of the vast universe, does something by himself, he demonstrates his supreme power by doing it in a stupendous, awe-inspiring manner. But when it is actually God who is doing something through humans, it must start the smallest, like the grain of mustard seed, the smallest of herbs," it says, "which grows to become the largest." God's works through humans must start the smallest, but they grow and grow and grow until they become the biggest. This is why we want to help our students coming into the program now when they see this big sprawling campus. We want for them to appreciate how it all started, to remember. We're warned to remember, after all. Even the ones that weren't around when it was all just getting off the ground, when it was all just starting. We want to help our children, our children's children, to understand this concept deeply, to appreciate our history. It's their history, that history that started with 12 people that were just working to get Malachi's message out to a few brethren here in central Oklahoma, a few brethren up in Ohio, and then it just spread from there. And a little ways in, just like with Herbert Armstrong, we realized, okay, we need a magazine to go with it. The Trumpet magazine came along in 1990. The church initially went on radio. My father had a radio program back in 1992. And then we started in on TV, the Key of David TV program, in 1993. 1996, we printed Mystery of the Ages for the first time. That triggered a six-year lawsuit, the Worldwide Church of God doing everything that it could to prevent Mystery of the Ages from going out. They had a Christian duty to keep it out of print. So said Joe DeCotch Jr. He said it in his book. We want to keep this out of print. We want to stamp it out. We want to censor this. And God wouldn't let that happen. And then, as I mentioned earlier, all the advances in purchasing the land and building the college, even as we were fighting in court there in the early 2000s. It's glorious history that God says, remember. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, don't forget, you can write to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.